Okay. Only 10 more presents to wrap. You're almost at the finish line. But first... There. The last one. Enjoy a Coca-Cola for a pause that refreshes.
If you're a smoker or vapor ready to make a change, you really only need one good reason. But with Zyn nicotine pouches, you'll discover many good reasons. Reasons like Zyn nicotine pouches are still America's number one choice for smoke-free, hands-free nicotine satisfaction. Or because you can choose between 10 varieties, each available in either 3 or 6 milligrams of nicotine satisfaction. Or even because Zyn offers a robust rewards program full of premium items and experiences. How's that for good reasons? Now, if you're still unsure whether Zyn is the right change for you, there's only one way to find out. Check out Zyn.com/find to find Zyn at a store near you. You have a lot of options when it comes to nicotine satisfaction, but there's only one Zyn. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
This episode is brought to you by Bitdefender, team partner of Ferrari. Visit bitdefender.com to learn more about how Bitdefender supports Ferrari to stay ahead of cyber threats and how you can make your digital life safer. In 75 years of Formula One, only 15 teams have won the World Constructors' Championship. Ferrari, Williams, McLaren, Mercedes, and Red Bull are among the elite group with their names on the shining silver trophy. Aston Martin's only aim is to join them.
We all want to win every single race that we compete in, but we acknowledge the fact that our opponents are mighty. We don't want to survive being fifth. There's a natural DNA in all of us, isn't there, to continually get better.
Team principal Andy Cowell knows what better feels like. His engine expertise powered Mercedes to multiple titles. Legendary designer Adrian Newey is now in Aston Martin Green. Owner Lawrence Stroll is funding their future. So, when will their hiring, their investment, and their new factory see them challenge for world titles? I'm Tom Clarkson, and that's what I asked Andy right here on F1 Beyond the Grid.
Andy, it's great to have you back on the show. It's been 5 years since we last had you on. How are things?
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, I remember it well. It was 2020, wasn't it? So partway through 2020, something like that. I handed my notice in at the start of the year, but was working notice and COVID, Project Pit Lane, HPP had just made 10,000 CPAP respirators, which was a huge achievement by the operations group largely that pulled that off.
It was wonderful to see Formula One club together like that, wasn't it? Now, you also mentioned on that show your love of building sprint cars, hill climb cars. And before we get into the nuts and bolts of Aston Martin, I just wanted to ask you, have you built a car? Have you raced it? What's been going on?
I guess I wanted to step away from motorsport, Formula One, for a while. And it wasn't until about 18 months ago that I started putting back together the sprint and hill climb car that I've got. I did a couple of tests and an event last August. So I did a sprint last year, which was good fun.
Ever competitive. How did you get on? Silverware?
Yeah, fastest time of the day.
Really? Hmm. You got it. Whatever it is, you've got it.
Yeah. Well, sprint and hill climbing is one of those lovely sports where it's very down to earth, gentleman racing, home-built cars, home-prepared cars. And I love the environment. I love the competitiveness of that.
It sounds like the sort of project you might have done when you had your year out from university and you were working for Raynard.
Yeah, I spent 2 years at university and then went to Reynard Racing Cars in Bicester. Adrian Reynard came up with a graduate scheme, and I applied saying, I'm not yet a graduate, but how about take me on for a year? And it was a great year. I think there was about 10 of us joined the scheme. We stopped in 3 houses that Adrian had bought in Bicester. I think he paid us about £2,300 a year, which meant none of us paid tax, but we got free digs. And it was a great year, really, for seeing how the studies, the university studies, and also hobby could be applied in a real industry. And that's the point that I realised that motorsport was potentially a real career.
And what's interesting is that you were on the chassis side back then. And of course, you then did 30 years on the engine and power unit side after that.
Yeah, I went back to university, finished my degree off, knew that I wanted to work in motorsport. So I applied to lots of Formula One teams and other motorsport companies. Cosworth was one of those. And Cosworth offered me £11,000 on their graduate training scheme. Adrian offered me £6,000. And when you're young, that £5,000 difference is the decider. And so I joined Cosworth, and I could see that lots of people had joined Cosworth as graduates, but then moved into Formula One teams after maybe 5 years of being at Cosworth. Well, it's just taken me a few years longer to move from playing with power units to working on racing cars.
Well, let's talk about the racing cars now. Of course, you're CEO and team principal here at Aston Martin. What's the mood in the camp?
You know, we're excited to get racing again. We've got a great campus here. You know, 3 large factories, 1,000 people. We've got a driver in the loop simulator that's been used by Fernando and Lance for the first time. A wind tunnel that's still in commissioning, and it's building the group up. That's what we're working on, building up the methods that we use, understanding the tools. The commissioning phase is all about learning about the precision of the new tool, the reliability of the new tool, and just bringing it all together. So we're building as a team, really, and taking that transition from being a customer team, where you're buying the rear end of the car, to in 26, we're powered by Honda, but with our own transmission and rear suspension and everything created by Aston Martin, Formula One team, Honda, Aramco and Valvoline.
It feels like it's been a team in transition since Lawrence Stroll bought it back in the summer of 2018. When do you think the transition will have finished and you'll be ready to challenge for the world championship?
That's a good question. We're working hard to improve, and what we're trying to instill is an aspect of the facilities, the tools, understand it really well, the methods, evolve them, but understand them, but then work together as a team where we're creating ideas, and we're doing experiments to see whether those ideas will make the racing car quicker. And that activity is all based in the factory.
How much of that comes down to mentality? Because let's go back to your Mercedes high-performance powertrains era of, what was it, 7 consecutive drivers and constructors titles. Describe the spirit in the team that you were running then. What was it like to be on that wave of success? And how do you then try and recreate that here at Aston Martin?
I think Lawrence's vision is very clear. You know, he bought a team that was great at surviving, but had ultimately gone into administration. And he put personal commitment and investment in. What we see here is a clear indication of that investment. The tools inside the factory, another indication, proof point of that. And the people that he's gathering here as well. So he's putting together all the ingredients. But as you say, it's setting the ambition level. We don't want to survive being 5th all the time. What we want to do is to develop at a rate that means we progressively overtake our opponents. So our performance development rate needs to improve so that we overtake our opponents and get to the front. And then we keep our performance development rate going steeper than our opponents. And then you stay at the front. You've got to look inside an organization. You can't control the other nine teams. All you can do is control what you do. Maybe with politics, you can interfere a little bit with what others are doing. But largely it's, you know, what's in your circle of influence, and make sure that every single department has got very clear responsibilities. And I think the word responsibilities makes it a lot more personable rather than talking about accountabilities. Accountability feels like as blame. Yeah. Whereas, you know, I want everybody to know what their three crucial responsibilities are to deliver for the race car. And we set goals that are ambitious, and we talk openly when it's not going well. Yeah. So I don't want to hear all the good news. I want to hear where people are struggling, where perhaps the resource isn't good enough, where the tools aren't strong enough. Then improve. Solve problems in an open way and improve. And I think it's that mentality of it's every single department needs to shoot for an excellent standard and get there quickly.
If you're a smoker or vapor ready to make a change, you really only need one good reason. But with Zyn nicotine pouches, you'll discover many good reasons. Reasons like Zyn nicotine pouches are still America's number one choice for smoke-free, hands-free nicotine satisfaction. Or because you can choose between 10 varieties, each available in either 3 or 6 milligrams of nicotine satisfaction. Or even because Zyn offers a robust rewards program full of premium items and experiences. How's that for good reasons? Now, if you're still unsure whether Zyn is the right change for you, there's only one way to find out. Check out Zyn.com/find to find Zyn at a store near you. You have a lot of options when it comes to nicotine satisfaction, but there's only one Zyn. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
Still to come in this episode, Andy talks Adrian Newey, Fernando Alonso, Lance Stroll, and the team's future with Honda Engines. But here's some news from Formula One's other official podcasts. On F1 Nation, you can hear our review of the Australian Grand Prix. I'm joined by the team at Network 10 to get an Aussie perspective on that sensational Grand Prix in Melbourne. And our preview of the next race in Shanghai will be out on Thursday. Plus, this week's F1 Explains is all about what happens when a driver moves teams with special guest Valtteri Bottas. Search your podcast app for F1 Nation and F1 Explains.
You've been in Formula One for 30 years. This is a very difficult question for you to answer, but what do you think is the secret to success in Formula One?
It's the group of people. It's the team of people using the equipment to a level where they know the strengths and weaknesses of the equipment. They know the strengths and weaknesses of the methods, but they're using it as best they can and in a very honest way, a team collaborative way. You know, it's a joy to see teams work well together. It's getting a team such that, you know, if there's an up issue of the drawing, the operations team reflect on, well, that's progress. A change isn't a problem. A change is to be embraced because development is good. And equally, it's having the understanding that what you request on a drawing is really, really hard to achieve. So there's some empathy with manufacturing in what they're achieving and just open understanding across all areas. And so it's 1,000 people all trying their best, but reflecting on how to get better every single time. And I think that's the secret. And there's one currency, and it's lap time. Yeah. And there's one purpose, and it's the fast product. Formerly, it was a power unit with some very clear KPIs. And now it's the whole racing car with some very clear KPIs. And it's getting 1,000 people to focus on those KPIs and continually improve. And I think that's the secret to success.
Okay. And when you were winning everything at Mercedes, did you get to a point where you and the team felt invincible?
Never. There's no such thing as perfection. There's no such thing as invincibility. It's down to continued hard work. And it's down to a continuous reflection on what you've just achieved. Going into a race, there are always things that you're worried about. Well, if you won the race, the things that you were worried about, make sure that you're not next time you go into a race.
Because Niki Lauda always used to say...
I was just thinking about Niki.
He always used to say, you learn more when you lose.
Yeah.
So when you're winning the whole time,
yeah.
Do you think you learnt less during that period than if you hadn't been winning?
No, because you're constantly looking. From my perspective, you're constantly looking on how can you get better. If you are chasing an opponent that's doing better than you, you know that it's possible to do better. The only aspect of being out the front is that you don't know how much better you can get per year. But you can still set a target based on the previous trajectory. It's about trying. It's about pushing. It's about not sitting back. It's about having the fear of being caught up. The human race is remarkable, isn't it, for continually developing and continually improving. So there's a natural DNA in all of us, isn't there, to continually get better.
Especially in Formula One. I've said it many times that it's a sport that is fueled on paranoia.
Absolutely.
Paranoid of being caught up.
Yeah, yeah. It's the land of the obsessive.
Let's bring it back to the AMR 25. Do you think you have a platform with this car that is going to be, that you're going to be able to improve throughout the year? Because another thing we've seen with the team over the last couple of seasons is it's tailed off towards the end of the year.
I guess this coming year is a challenging year for everybody with regards to how much effort you put into developing this year's car versus creating in the factory next year's car. We are working hard to make sure that we develop using, you know, new tools, new methods, and land steps forward that match with the expectations from the factory.
And so in terms of championship position, you know, it's been fifth for the last couple of years. Fifth, fourth, third, does that make any difference to you really, where you finish? Is it ultimately all about winning under the new regulations in 26 onwards?
Every single race we go into it, hoping that we'll do well and pushing hard in order to do well, to maximise the points that we can get out of the car and the setup and the strategy. So we're going out to do our best in every single one. But so are the other nine teams, the other 18 drivers. But, you know, we'll push hard this year. We'll learn more from the experience of going racing this year. And in parallel, we will improve the facilities here, improve the tools, improve the methods, and bed in a different leadership style and people.
Tell us a little bit about the wind tunnel. It's in the throes of coming on stream. I think it's almost days now, isn't it, that we're going to see it come to life. How is that going to improve the situation here at Silverstone?
Yeah, it's in the commissioning phase at the moment, which means it is alive. You know, we're blowing wind. We're testing an old spec of car, which is what the FIA permit teams to do when they create a new wind tunnel or upgrade an existing one. And we're just getting to the point of, you know, is the tunnel reliable? So every test we do, will it give us a result, or is there going to be a glitch in the way it operates? And is it measuring precisely? So we're just going through some very thorough tests to make sure that when we decide to swap over and nominate our tunnel rather than using the one at Brackley, we know that we're stepping into something that is robust and it's a useful, precise tool.
How long does this process last, the checking process?
The phrase is, it'll be ready when it's ready, which is quite, you know, I don't want us to leap into things until it's definitely ready. So what we're trying to do is set very clear quality standards. So at the start of the journey, what is the, right, we're going to set off, we're going to try and create something. Can we define the key parameters that mean that we've achieved, and define that early on, so that then when you're getting to the emotional phase of, are we ready to transfer across or not, we're driven by data. And so we've got some very clear parameters that we need to achieve in terms of precision and reliability. When they're hit, then we'll ring the bell and say, yeah, it's good to go.
If you're not transforming what's in the tunnel into pieces that you can run on the track, how are you going to know if you have correlation issues until you're able to do that?
I guess we'll have to do that.
Okay. Yeah. But this is all going to happen in 2025.
Absolutely. Yes.
You've told us what you're hoping to achieve this year. What about Lawrence Stroll? Is there correlation between what you think is feasible this year and what he wants to see the team achieve in 2025?
I think we're very well aligned. We'd both love to win this year's championship. When we're sat down chatting, what would we really, really love? We'd love to win, but we know that we're in the building phase. So the vision, the aspiration is matched between the pair of us, as it is with everybody here. We all want to win every single race that we compete in. But we acknowledge the fact that our opponents are mighty. They are a lot more mature. I forget how many decades Ferrari have been racing in Formula One in, and McLaren and Mercedes and Red Bull. You know, they're highly established teams that have been through many regulation cycles. And we're building. You know, we've just put this building together. We're just putting these facilities in that we're still commissioning. And it's a team of people that's grown tremendously. You know, 248 people joined last calendar year. It's a new young team that we're developing. So we're all frustrated that we're not managing to deliver a quicker car and do updates that are, you know, consistently landed on track, because it's a huge amount of effort. You know, the effort that the team put into all those updates last year is tremendous. You know, whether that's aerodynamicists, engineers, laminators, you know, people at trackside having new parts coming in every weekend and doing compares, all that effort that goes in, and then you don't get the reward of the car going quicker. It's dispiriting for everybody. So we're all aligned with our desire, our vision, and our frustration. The thing that I'm trying to do is understand where we're at within the business. As a former engineer, I'm getting into the detail of what's happening in every area of the business, every area of the engineering aspect, aerodynamics, etc., and trying to understand it, and then talking with Lawrence about it and saying, well, this is where I think we are. And so on a daily basis, Lawrence and I have a chat about what have the new discoveries been, what have the new steps of progress been, and just keep him up to date and involve him in the discussions on organization, on investment, and so on, and then show when we get gains from that as well.
Now, one team boss described Lawrence Stroll to me as a bulldozer. How do you find him?
Who described Lawrence as a bulldozer?
I don't think now is the right moment for me to say who that person was, only that he was a team principal, and that I think the point is he will stop at nothing to get his way. Do you find that?
I don't think he's a bulldozer. He's determined. Yeah, he's determined. He's got a passion. He's got an enthusiasm. He's observing what's required to get things done. And like all of us, it's frustrating if things don't happen at the pace that you'd like. But it's important to have the details, the understanding of what's going on.
And how different is it for you to have an individual as your boss rather than a company, a car company, that's been the case for most of your career?
I think I've always had an individual as my boss. They're not quite so inanimate.
But one person who's able to make decisions.
Yeah, but that's always been the case. Marcus Schaefer was my boss when I was at Mercedes or Ola Källenius. And, you know, they're super passionate about motorsport. I didn't talk to them every day because they'd got a range of other activities. With Lawrence, you know, a day a week he's here, if not 2 days a week, to see what's happening, to see what's going on, to provide support. He provides a very clear focus. You know, we referenced Niki Lauda earlier on in terms of a no-nonsense sort of cut through the fog and focus on the first order. Niki was very good at that. Lawrence is also very good at that. And I enjoy that. You know, I'd much rather have that than the woolliness of we want to be fifth in the championship and so on, which, you know, I've worked in that environment a long time ago.
If you're a smoker or vapor ready to make a change, you really only need one good reason. But with Zyn nicotine pouches, you'll discover many good reasons. Reasons like Zyn nicotine pouches are still America's number one choice for smoke-free, hands-free nicotine satisfaction. Or because you can choose between 10 varieties,
each available in either 3 or 6 milligrams of nicotine satisfaction. Or even because Zyn offers a robust rewards program full of premium items and experiences. How's that for good reasons? Now, if you're still unsure whether Zyn is the right change for you, there's only one way to find out. Check out Zyn.com/find to find Zyn at a store near you. You have a lot of options when it comes to nicotine satisfaction, but there's only one Zyn. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
You said a moment ago 248 people have joined in the last calendar year. One of them, Adrian Newey. Where do you want him to focus, first of all? 25 car, 26 car, or even beyond?
The starting point is to meet the people, to meet the key engineering people and operational and other areas of the business, to get to know people and to understand the way we're working and get to know the tools, the CFD output, the wind tunnel data. So he's spending time getting up to speed with all of those tools and to understand how engineering work is done here. He's been in a 2026 concept meeting on the very first day, getting into the detail of the layout of the car with ideas and thoughts. But I've also had conversations with him about what we learnt in Bahrain and what we think has improved and what we think hasn't improved. So it's a variety of things to focus on.
And how do you feel people have received him?
I think lots of people are in awe of what he's achieved through his career and the determined, competitive, creative person that he is. And, you know, the conversations that I've had with him over the last few days, you know, he is driven, he is focused, he is creative, but he's got a great sense of humour as well.
Now, I'm guessing you might have worked with him before, just as he was coming to the end of his McLaren stint, and of course it was McLaren Mercedes. Did you have much to do with him back then? What are we, 2004, 2005?
Yeah, so I joined Mercedes Omar at the start of 2004 and looked after their engine through 2004 and did quite a sizable upgrade in that year working with Adrian. And I've always enjoyed working with him. He's data-driven, he's creative, he's competitive. And so in terms of the key graph that we're all chasing, which is performance improvement in record-breaking time, he's wired to chase that sort of thing. And he cuts complex systems down into very simple focus. And that's, you know, that's the sign of somebody that really understands their subject matter.
And aside from his design inspiration, what else does he bring to the team?
We go back to what Lawrence is setting out to do. You know, it's a very clear indicator to everybody here that Lawrence is serious about what he's trying to achieve, you know, to convince somebody like Adrian to join Aston Martin. And so that's it's a very clear example of the determination to get to the front. And I think the creativity, the competitiveness, that there've been lots of discussions over the months while we've been waiting for Adrian to join, where, you know, I've mischievously said, you know, lead times are going to have to come down. You know what Adrian's going to say? Leave the development in the wind tunnel an extra week.
Is what happened this year, wasn't it?
Yes. So, you know, we got an extra 3 to 4 weeks, depending on the component, of development time in the wind tunnel, just from being able to, you know, mischievously say, you know, let's get warmed up before Adrian joins. So there are many, many benefits.
You know Adrian. Do you think he needs a sparring partner? And what I mean by that is, people have said that at Williams, Patrick Head was a good set of eyes and ears for him to bounce ideas off. And then, of course, when he was at McLaren, he had Neil Oatley. And in the latter years at Red Bull, he had Pierre Vacher. Does he need someone like that here at Aston Martin? And is that what Enrico Cardile is coming in to do?
We all need people to discuss things with. I think ideas always evolve better when you've got somebody to have a chat with. And there are many people in the engineering office that, that Adrian can discuss things with. So, you know, they're the relationships that, you know, he's building right from hour one in the factory to meet those key people, to get to know them on a personal level as well as on a working level. And then it's very much a case of, you know, encouraging dialogue, isn't it? To formulate ideas and to improve ideas ahead of then doing experiments to confirm ideas.
Useful that you're an engineer.
Hopefully useful that I'm an engineer. I hope so. All joking aside, the key thing that I want to do is to understand the business and then help. And help pushes in the right direction. I enjoy encouraging every single department of the business to get better. I ask every single department to help me get better as I learn about this company, this industry. And I hope that my experience of being an engineer can help explain, from department to department. You know, from Honda integration into the team here. I've been on both sides, I can explain the situation, I can explain the balances that happen, and hopefully I can just bring that sort of that logical but competitive approach to it all and bring it together as a team.
And of course Adrian has experience with Honda as well. That must help.
Exactly, yeah. Max's recent championships have all been with Honda. Well, all his championships have been with Honda.
And have you been to Sakura in Japan and started to get heavily involved in the integration that you just mentioned?
I visited Sakura in October. So in the opening weeks, I went to Sakura and I went to Aramco to get an understanding of the targets of the progress and so on. Sakura was a thoroughly enjoyable visit. Their achievements are amazing. Their infrastructure is awesome. Their test facilities.
Isn't the building amazing? Isn't it like it's the longest building I've ever been? Yeah, I've been there too. You can't see from one end to the other.
It is incredible. And the test environment is just amazing. There's an absolute buzz in there. What's been achieved there is incredible. And their enthusiasm to develop quickly, their openness as to where they are at the moment. Yeah, it's an enjoyable working relationship. You know, we've got a team of people here working on power unit integration, integrating into the chassis with the cooling systems, integration into the transmission, which is something new for us to create, and the hydraulic system, which again is something new. And so those teams are working well. Strong relationships built up, clear targets, and I'll help wherever I can. And I've said to the integration team here, as soon as I joined, I said, look, if you want me to work as an engineer the odd afternoon, let's do it. And I'll sit and I'll say what I think. But at the end of the day, they've got the responsibility to make the final call. It's their task to do. You know, it's Honda are creating the power unit. Our integration people are creating the cooling systems. Our transmission group are creating the transmission. And yes, I've got engineering experience. But as you pointed out at the start, 5 years ago, so my experience is from the past. So maybe it's more about approach rather than absolute technical knowledge.
How important is it for Aston Martin to have a works engine going into the new regulations?
I think when you've got a works relationship, then the power unit is created integral with the car. Yeah. So the junction into the back of the chassis, the cooling system, where the water pump's positioned, the oil pump, charge cooling, all of that is done as one car. Yeah, one car concept. And so everything fits together a lot more seamlessly. There's greater understanding. When you're a customer, it's a finished product that you get, and you might get that information later than you'd ideally like it. So the ability to refine the design is what a works relationship provides.
Do you think you'll notice those benefits more with the new regulations than we're perhaps seeing now in 2025? I mean, people listening to this will probably be saying, oh, but McLaren won the constructor's title last year with a customer engine. It can't be that important.
I think, at the moment, the current regulation set, the current power units are at the end of a long journey. You know, it's a long time since the 2014 power unit was created. So, 2024 is a long way down the line for the evolution of the power units. And I think the performance spread was relatively tight. And the aerodynamic regulations as well, things had tightened up. Although this aerodynamic regulation set's very difficult to grab hold of. And we saw even front-running teams take development directions that they U-turned out of. But, 2026 is a change in the power unit, considerably bigger battery, less loaded internal combustion engine, considerably bigger MGUK. So the heat rejection to each of the systems is different. And so the integration into the car is going to be different. The aerodynamics are different because it's a flat bottom car rather than a Venturi tunnel car. And so the requirement from the aerodynamicists, the wish list of surface profiles from the aerodynamicists is going to be different. And so having the opportunity to position everything that you're permitted to vary, lots of it is controlled by the FIA and the regulations, but having the opportunity to position it where you think is best, that's where the performance differential will come. And I think in the first year of the regulations, although, it's 5 years that we're going to go racing with these, that does provide an opportunity.
You were heavily involved in the formation of the current power unit regulations. I mean, you with your Mercedes hat on, of course, others as well. How satisfied are you with the regulations for 26?
It's easy to criticize new regulations, yeah, because you become attached to the existing regulations. So it's like a familiar friend. I think the new regulations, there's the fact that we're going to be running a sustainable fuel in 2026, I think so. A huge step forward for Formula One. And we really ought to talk about that a lot for the fuel companies to be developing advanced sustainable fuels that run in high performance engines is a great step forward. The battery technology is a lot more road relevant, transport relevant for 2026, just because of the size of the battery compared with the smaller battery that we're racing with. And so those features from a power unit perspective, I think, are a good step forward. From an aerodynamic perspective, having a car that is more energy efficient because it's got a drop the drag straight line mode, that's a good idea as well. And potentially the flat bottomed cars are more drivable. We'll have less cars hitting the track and hurting drivers. So there are many features, I think, built into the regulations. And it's for all of us to read the regulations now they're written and get on with creating the best overall concept and therefore the fastest race car that we can conceive.
And with your engineering head on, do you think the PU regs, there's enough scope there to see quite a few different approaches?
I think the regulations constrain quite a lot, and the evolution that we've seen over the last 10 years of PU regulations means that the change will be less than we saw going from 2013 to 2014, but still a big challenge.
Now, as an aside, can I just get your thoughts on something the FIA president, Mohammed Ben Sulayem, said recently? We should consider going forward, he said, going back to V10 engines with sustainable fuel. What do you think of that?
I think sustainable fuel's a great idea, which we've got for 2026. Anything beyond 2030, I'm not really thinking about at the moment, to be honest. I'm just focused on bringing this team together and how do we go racing in the period from 26 to 2030.
I think a lot of fans jumped on what the president said because they were thinking about noise. Will the PU sound better in 26 than the current ones?
I think the base internal combustion engine sound will be the same. You know, there's a turbocharger which knocks the edge off the volume. The RPM level's the same.
Does the lack of an MGUH make any difference to the noise?
One of the wonderful things, well, there are two wonderful things about an MGUH. One is that you're recovering waste energy, so there's less energy going down the tailpipe. And the key one is that you've got turbo speed control, which means you don't need an anti-lag system. For 2026, do you need an anti-lag system? And how do you go about that? Or do you just keep the load high all the time on the engine? It'll be very interesting to see what everybody's doing. And in Barcelona next year, everybody will be watching that carefully at the first test.
If you're a smoker or vapor ready to make a change, you really only need one good reason. But with Zyn nicotine pouches, you'll discover many good reasons. Zyn is America's number one nicotine pouch brand. Plus, Zyn offers a robust rewards program. There are lots of options when it comes to nicotine satisfaction. But there's only one Zyn. Check out Zyn.com/find to find Zyn at a store near you. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. If you're a smoker or vapor ready to make a change, you really only need one good reason. But with Zyn nicotine pouches, you'll discover many good reasons. Zyn is America's number one nicotine pouch brand. Plus, Zyn offers a robust rewards program. There are lots of options when it comes to nicotine satisfaction. But there's only one Zyn. Check out Zyn.com/find to find Zyn at a store near you. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
Can we talk about your team principal bit that you added to your job list over the winter? You joined in October last year as CEO. You're now team principal as well. Can you explain why you've taken on that extra responsibility?
When Lawrence first spoke to me, he was clear that he wanted me to lead the team. And, you know, talking to him through the summer and in the autumn, he was, you know, he's fairly clear that it's better if there's a person leading the team. If you've got a CEO and a team principal, well, who's in charge? If you reflect on historical F1 terminology, then it's the team principal that's leading the organization. If you look at a lot of the organization charts that are currently in place, then it's the CEO that's leading the business. And so we agreed that it would be simpler and clearer to have one person taking both responsibilities. And you know, those responsibilities, there's a huge amount of overlap, which is why this isn't a unique scenario, is it? You know, there are other teams where there's an individual as CEO and team principal.
So Mercedes, Red Bull, you do it that way, but McLaren have a CEO and a team principal. Yeah. I mean, different philosophies.
Ferrari don't have a CEO, I don't think.
No.
But we decided that it would flatten the organisation. I'm very keen to make sure that we've got an efficient leadership structure. You know, how do we get more people working on the car rather than leading people? And so taking a level out helps with communication.
Was it a difficult conversation for you to have with Mike Crack, who was the team principal for 3 years?
Mike's a great guy. Met him on the very first day that I was in the factory back in September time. He's a great guy. He's super enthusiastic about motor racing and about this team. And when I spoke to him about the way I see the organization evolving, we got to the conclusion that this was the best approach for the team to be able to have a chief trackside officer focusing on getting the most out of the car and making sure that the group that's in the factory can focus on race car development. If you've got a small team, you tend to find that when there's a race event on, everybody just has to go to the track. And there's a receptionist left in the factory and not much else. And that's the way small teams operate. You know, we're a team of 1,000. How do we come up with a very clear line where, you know, you're factory-based, you're developing the tools, the technology, you're developing for the future, and you're making sure that what you create when it goes to the track does work. And then a team that have the, you know, the arduous task of going to 24 races around the globe, You know what it's like. It saps the energy out of you. How much energy have you got left for doing development work for the future? Nothing, really. And so, you know, talking about having a chief technical officer leading the engineering organization within the factory on campus and a chief trackside officer leading the engineering focus of setting the car up, the pre race work, and then passing back to the factory what's missing from the car in order for us to win, what would need to be added to the performance parameters of the car. I think that will help us move forward tremendously. And Mike is a great guy. He's got a huge amount of experience and is a very calm, considered, logical thinking person under that pressure of going to races and traveling to 24 events. So he's the ideal candidate for that role.
We've talked engineers, we've talked 26, we've talked structure. Can we talk about racing drivers now?
Yeah.
What is it like for you to be working with Fernando Alonso, who for so many years was a thorn in your side?
I'm not sure he's ever really been a thorn in my side. Fernando's a great racing driver and a great competitor. But equally, we've got Lance in the team who's got great hunger. He's 26. He's super hungry, you know, and gets as grumpy as me when the car's not performing well. So we've got this great pairing with, you know, Fernando's experience and drive and hunger and, you know, experience of many car types. And he's seen lots of different engineering organizations at different stages of maturity. But then Lance is, you know, he's hunger and his humor as well. He's a fun chap. In my previous life as a power unit provider, you're one step away from the driver. You do talk to the driver about drivability issues and why it broke if the engine happens to break. But here, you know, working with them on a closer personal relationship. I'm loving the conversations with Lance and Fernando.
You're clearly enjoying working with both. Just what impresses you about Fernando? We'll come on to Lance in a minute.
Fernando's got a great drive and a great understanding of the race car and can condense 12 issues down to the three most important ones.
He's ferociously intelligent, I find. When you speak to him, he always says something interesting. You may not agree with everything he says, but he's quite convincing.
Yes.
Is he the same when he's talking about the car?
Yeah, absolutely. I think all racing drivers, the bit that amazes me is that, you know, I'm a amateur bumbling racing driver now and again in the past, is the way they've got spare processing capacity to be data loggers as well. You know, how do they drive a car in such arduous conditions and then come back and sit down and regale exactly what happened corner by corner? That's the thing that I think is remarkable.
And how is Fernando Alonso still able to do all that and be so competitive at the age of 43? He's sort of defying what should be humanly possible.
Age is just a number, isn't it?
Well, yeah, exactly. Except unless you believe what Toto Wolff said last year about Lewis Hamilton, I'm going to quote him actually. Everybody has a shelf life, said Toto. We're in a sport where cognitive sharpness is extremely important. I need to look at the next generation. What do you make of what Toto said about age and racing drivers there?
We can't see any diminishing performance from Fernando. He's tremendously hungry. He's pushing hard. He's driving a car from a generation that's exceptionally tough to drive. You know, they're exceptionally stiff and low, and he delivers tremendous performances.
And what happens if either of them falls over in the shower and can't race? Who is your reserve driver? Is it Drugovic? Is it Zach Crawford? Is Pedro de la Rosa going to put his helmet in the ring?
We would offer it to Pedro. What do you think he'd say? He'd be up for
he'd
it, wouldn't he?
Absolutely.
He's still
up
got
for
the
it.
Lap record at Bahrain, hasn't he?
He reminded me. He will tell us
during testing. Yeah.
But it is Felipe Drugovic.
Felipe, who's he drove the car in FP1 last year. He did some TPC work. He's a tremendously talented young driver, and I guess it's a shame that there aren't more opportunities to, you know, 3 days of testing. you know, how many days of testing did we used to do, which would provide the opportunity for young drivers to get more track experience.
You mentioned Lance's humour, his enthusiasm. He drives the sim a lot. He comes in for a fair bit of flack because he's the son of the boss. You've seen the data. How quick is he?
He's quick. He's here in the factory and he's driving the simulator and helping us develop that, which is a key thing that we need. We need Fernando and Lance to be driving the simulator so that better correlates with the race car in the real world of the track. And the great thing is that Lance is more sensitive to some parameters of the car and Fernando's more sensitive to other parameters. And in one of the debriefs, Lance starts talking about one of the features of the car and Fernando says, yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't picked up on that, but you're right. Yeah, we do need to improve that. So there's a good partnership there and they work together exceptionally well. And I think that's a key asset that we've got of the partnership at the moment.
So exciting times ahead for you in the new job, for the team, obviously. Will you be disappointed if you don't see a podium this year?
Of course, yeah. You know, as I said earlier on, you know, we want to do well. We want to score lots of points every race that we go to. And every time we don't, we're disappointed. We're building. We're getting better. We're trying to make that our foundations are robust. Yeah. And that's of our engineering machine, our engineering capability. Because I'm a firm believer if we get that right and we build up from that, we'll be able to develop quick racing cars regardless of the regulation set. You know, we've got a new set for 2026. Do you think they'll stay stable for 5 years or do you think there might be a tweak? History says that there may well be a tweak and we'll adapt and we'll set the organisation up to be agile and to get over that sort of regulation change. And I'm really looking forward to seeing this whole team working well together and operating with that spirit.
Well, Andy, best of luck. Thank you very much for your time. If I could ask you one final thing, it's something I'm asking everyone on the pod this year. It is the 75th anniversary of Formula One. Just a best moment or a best memory for you in the 75 years of Formula One?
I guess 2014 was an exciting year. New technology, exceptionally high thermal efficiency achieved by all the teams working on it. So that was an exciting year. You know, that was a year when I did every single race because we were learning every single race. So yeah, 2014 was an exciting year for me.
Andy, thank you very much.
That was a really enjoyable conversation. Thank you, Andy. He's a hugely impressive leader and very articulate. He's logical and he's very competitive, and that makes him an inspirational figure and a great choice of team principal. He's also an engineer with great pedigree, and I can't help but feel that he and Adrian Newey will be a formidable force, especially when it comes to negotiating the regulation changes for 2026. Good luck to you, Andy, and thanks again for your time. Now, a couple more things before I go. First, race tickets for this season are all available now. Go to tickets.formula1.com to book your grandstands, your general admission or hospitality. And second, why not download the F1 app and join F1 Unlocked for exclusive features and competitions. Get unrivaled insight into the world of Formula One. I will, of course, be back next week, but for now, thanks for listening. F1 Beyond the Grid is produced by Formula One and Audioboom Studios. Until next time, keep it flat out.
Okay, only 10 more presents to wrap. You're almost at the finish line. But first, there, the last one. Enjoy a Coca-Cola for a pause that refreshes.